Welcome to D-Backs Podcast.
The future.
Technology and stuff.
This is the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sports, 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 sports.
From the field to the front office, the ballpark to the broadcast booth, it's time to talk D-Backs baseball.
Just think about baseball.
Here are Greg Schulte and a high drive to left. Back she goes. And Steve Berthew.
Look at Chris Owens. Go get it.
Play ball.
From Petco Park in San Diego, California, this is D-Backs Podcast, the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks. We are officially 1 week into the 2015 Major League Baseball season, and there was a lot to like about the start of the D-backs year. Three close, exciting games against the defending champion Giants and a series victory over those favored Dodgers, and we'll discuss the week that was on this show. We'll also, guys, look ahead as we begin our first road trip of the year. Three games here against the Padres at Petco Park, then a return match with San Francisco, four games at AT&T Park by the water, where I hope you brought your jackets. Might be a little chilly. I'm Steve Berthew. Welcome to episode 17, our first road show of the year on D-backs Podcast. And we will be taking the show with us on the road all season long. Our schedule for the podcast, we believe, will be, Leo, now correct me if I'm wrong here, one show for every homestand or road trip or thereabouts. Is that about what you have?
Okay. Yeah, I thought we were kind of making this up as we go.
Yeah, that's we're kind of rolling with it here.
We'll definitely do home and road. And
I think it'll be a lot of fun, like we're doing today, to take the show on the road from different ballparks and hear from different folks. And as always, we thank you for listening and downloading. A big week for the Game of Thrones, folks, as the new season began last night as we tape this on Monday, the 13th of April. I did notice that the Chase Field staff had the Game of Thrones theme music playing throughout the ballpark during pregame preps and warm-ups on Sunday in anticipation of the big season opener. Now, I am the only person on the D-backs podcast staff who actually watches the show Game of Thrones, and because we traveled here to San Diego right after the game on Sunday against the Dodgers, I have yet to even see the first show of the new season. So, as you can imagine, I am a little bit of at a disadvantage here today, even more so than usual, and feeling very much like Tyrion Lannister looking out over the ocean from the house in Pentos, as, you know, trying to figure out how do I save Westeros.
You lost yet, Candy?
Yeah. I am. I could be a little bit like Brienne of Tarth, just wandering the Seven Kingdoms with Podrick, trying to find something to do. But that's the situation in which we find ourselves. And the last analogy segues, I thought, nicely into the introduction for the stars of D-backs Podcast. The longtime broadcast voice of the Diamondbacks since before the First Men. And ever since, he has been a watcher on the wall, the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the Earl of Grantham. It's the Governor, Greg Schulte.
Hey, I'm here. I'm ready to go.
Filling out your lineup card while you pod.
Yep.
So multitasking here. Also on the program, who's now filling out, as he often does, what looks like a mock draft on his computer.
It is.
It's Tom Candiotti making another guest star appearance on the show. Are you doing a baseball draft, right?
I'm trying to fill out our league so we can have a little baseball draft going on. Fantasy baseball.
We are starting our own fantasy league. We're a week behind, as always. And we decided early in our pre-show meeting that the name of the league would be Snake Talk. Is that correct?
That's it.
I like that.
That's a good call.
So Snake Talk, the Fantasy Baseball League, and our draft is tomorrow at 1 o'clock here in the ballpark?
Yep, as long as I can get these guys to join, we're in there.
You got to get in touch with Rodrigo and everyone else. So we'll get that underway. And throughout Game of Thrones, there's always planning, there's scheming, most of it done by Littlefinger, who is wandering far somewhere from King's Landing with Sansa Stark. And it's on that note that we say hello to the Mother of Dragons, the Kingslayer, producer, engineer, man about town, Leo Gilmartin, who's already been heard from on the show.
Yeah, I thought I was, for a second there, I thought I was heading for a nickname of Littlefinger, which I was
Littlefinger,
not very excited about.
Well, Littlefinger, Leo.
Dragon Slayer is much better.
Leo, Littlefinger is the scheming conniver on the show.
That's scheming, I should say. That's not me.
And that's very much you, I thought. I thought that was a nice...
No, that's not me.
That's
I don't
not
scheme
you?
Or connive.
Mother of Dragons, no? Kingslayer's good.
Yeah.
So that's the Game of Thrones theme for the show. We are a week in, guys. And I think it was a pretty successful week. I mean, it would have been nice to steal another one against the Giants, but three exciting games. A series win over the Dodgers at home. That's, Gubb, I think, a pretty good start here.
Well, I think, Candy, I think you'll agree. What we saw the first week is what we thought. The Diamondbacks are going to score some runs offensively. You know, they haven't hit a lot of extra base hits yet, but they've got three-run homers. They've got a pair of bases loaded doubles. So, you know, they're getting some big hits with guys on base. And we were concerned about the starting rotation. Archie has given him the longest outing of six innings. The other guys have either gone into the fifth or have gone short of the fifth. So a lot of the concerns and the possibilities that we saw, I think, coming out of spring training have held up in that first week.
Well, I agree with you. You know, this team's going to go as the starting pitching goes. And the one good thing about that first homestand was really the start by Archie, because he gave the Diamondbacks a big boost. Mm-hmm. And you really needed someone like that. And, you know, but they need to get some other guys going. You know, Josh Coleman has struggled. You know, what is he giving up, 19 hits in nine innings, I think it is. So he needs to kind of get on the go a little bit. Ruby De La Rosa pitching tonight. You know, looking for a better outing from him and the guys to get a little bit deeper in the game. The bullpen's been lights out.
Yeah, it has.
I mean, the bullpen's been great. I mean, how about the job Chafin. That some of the long guys have done? Chafin, one of them. I mean, they've really saved this club. So, you know, that part you got to be pretty happy with.
And we should mention that our special guest star on this episode 17 is the guy that Candy just mentioned, Archie Bradley, who will join us in a few minutes here on D-backs podcast. The bullpen, I think, guys, as you just said, has been the star of the show so far. I've really been an Andrew Chafin guy all through spring training. I love the way he competes. And as we start this show, he's retired, Candy, the last 16 batters he's faced, all in relief and much-needed long relief. Your impressions of Andrew Chafin?
He reminds me so much of Wade Miley when he first came up.
Oh,
he was pitching out of the bullpen.
Left-hander?
Left-hander. You know, give me the ball, I'm gonna jam it in there. And maybe doesn't have the greatest command, but his ball's wiggly. It has life to it.
Wiggly?
Yeah, it's wiggly. It might go this way. It might go that way. It's got life to it. And, you know, sometimes just being that little effectively kind of wild in the strike zone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, you can see the catcher maybe set up inside. Ball comes up and away, and you get a pop-up. You know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, that's what happens when you have a live arm. And Chafin's got a live arm. And so he reminds me an awful lot of Miley. He had that role when he first came up, and then, you know, he worked his way into the rotation, and he was excellent.
It's funny. Chafin came in on opening night against the Giants on in relief of Josh Coleman, faced Brandon Crawford. Crawford hit a ball down the right field line that got behind Mark Trumbo and resulted in two runs for the Giants. And since that first batter he faced this year, Gubb, Chafin has not allowed a base runner.
Yeah.
It's been amazing.
And, you know, the strikeout and the ground ball outs, and he was just dominating. And, you know, I can see maybe someday getting him into that rotation, as Candy said, you know, as Miley did. But, boy, you sure like it right now. And they need length. We talked about the inability to get beyond six innings, and Archie is the only one that's gone six. So you're going to need some long relief. They've got Chafin. They've got a guy like Delgado. They called up Schugel. They've got Hudson. So they've got some guys that can give them length. Delgado can go short. Got a little flexibility right now. Candy, they're carrying an extra pitcher with only four position players on the bench.
They got their own bus down there, just the pitching staff. Yeah. There's a lot of them down there.
Yeah.
You know, if there's ever a fight and the bullpen's got to run out, I'll take our guys. We got an extra guy down there. But, you know, you got to have those guys. I think early in the season, too, and, you know, with the starters not giving you a whole lot of length right now, you know, you got to rely on those guys. So, and they've done a great job. I mean, really, the bullpen has really saved, you know, that starting rotation.
And I think the way Chip and Mike Harkey have used them also, you know, nobody's been overused so far.
Yeah, you're
we
right.
We saw Ziegler extended a couple lanes the other day, but he hadn't pitched in 3 days. And he's been fortunate because he's gotten some length out of those guys who have, you know, had to go long.
Josh Coleman, two starts, two losses. He's worked only 9 2/3 innings total in those two starts and given up 19 hits. The velocity's been down a little bit. He hasn't been as fine around the edges of the strike zone. The command hasn't quite been there. Granted, it's only two starts in, certainly long way from panic time here. But, Candy, what have you seen from Josh so far that might not be working that has in the past?
Well, first of all, you know, you got to give him a pass for the first day. It's his first opening day start ever, and there's a lot of anxiety that goes into that, being, you know, heading the rotation, being the guy that's going to set the tone. I mean, there's a lot to that, and you know, I think next time he has that opportunity, I think he's going to be a lot better. He's going to know what to expect for it. But in that outing, I don't think he really threw a curveball till about the fourth or fifth inning or something like fourth inning, I think it was. And this last game against the Dodgers, he started throwing it a little bit earlier in the game, trying to get it. And he doesn't – he just has to throw it enough to keep it in the back of the hitter's minds that he does have another pitch. Mm-hmm. He does have that third pitch. And like you said, when you start losing a little velocity, and Josh doesn't rely on his velocity like pitchers, but – he relies on that separation between his changeup and his fastball. And so when that velocity drops down, then all of a sudden that gap gets a little bit closer. So, you know, and that makes that third pitch even more important to him, you know, when he's going to go out there and start.
And the other thing you said on the air yesterday, and it was true, he's having trouble getting left-handers out right now.
Yeah, I mean, the left-handers, you know, they got him with the Giants, and they got him yesterday with the Dodgers. They got him. And, you know, and they have quality left-handers. The Dodgers do especially. But, you know, so you're going to give up hits, you know. But, you know, if I'm not mistaken, I thought Josh did pretty well against left-handers last year in general. And I think a lot of that because his changeup, you know, is almost like a, you know, it just kind of fades away. It's not a straight change. It'll fade away to the left-handed hitters. And that's the one he gets his ground balls with.
Lefties hit 282 against Josh last year.
And the other thing, you know, he's always pitched well at Chase Field, but his first two starts have been at Chase, and they've been a little rocky. So, you know, he'll correct itself out. He'll get better as the starts go on, and, you know, he'll get further along into the ball games.
Goldie seems to pick up right where he left off when he was hit by that Fieri pitch.
Everybody
on August
panicked
1st
after
last
opening
year.
Day when he didn't have a hit and didn't get on base.
Boy, I mean, and part of it had to do with beating up the Dodgers, which he always seems to do well. But Gubb, you're right. I mean, yeah. I mean that first game for Goldie, you know, he did walk and score a run, but went 0 for 4 at the plate, struck out twice. Then comes back the next day, game two. Reaches base all four times he's up there. Two walks, two singles. He scored twice. Then he comes back in the third game against the Giants. A walk, a double, a run scored. Then the big opener against the Dodgers. Three hits, including the three-run homer. Then another home run in the Archie Bradley start. I mean, Goldie is right there where you expect him to be.
And, you know, yesterday, Candy, we saw him called out on a third strike early in the ball game by Angel Hernandez.
Yeah.
And Goldie never says anything. And he had a few words for Angel Hernandez. And he brought the point. That might have taken him out of his game a little bit for the rest of the contest.
Well, you know, once you get an umpire like Angel who likes to get very confrontational with players and emphatically struck him out on kind of a delayed call a little bit, you know, when you go up like that, next time you're going to take it in a bat, you know, you want to put that ball in play early and stuff. And I just thought he might have been dwelling on that a little bit. But, you know, it's tough. When you get an umpire that's not working with you, whether you're on the mound or whether you're hitting, and you feel the guy's, you know, he's on you a little bit, then, you know, it kind of takes you out of your game a little bit.
Chip Hale admitted this to the media over the weekend during the Dodger series. It's getting difficult not to have Ender Inciarte in a lineup every day. And Ender had a tremendous first week of.
Well, we've all been on his bandwagon. I mean, this kid, when he first came up, you could knock the bat out of his hands. They were weak little ground balls. But now all of a sudden he can slap the ball by the third baseman. He can bunt to the third baseman even with the third baseman playing in and still make it a close play and maybe even beat it out over there. We've seen him drive the ball. I mean, the game ended the other night, and we used a little play of word there. But, you know, he shot it right by Adrian Gonzalez over at first base. I mean, and defensively, this kid is turning into a solid major league player.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, he's disruptive.
Yes.
When you try to game plan against him as a pitcher coming up, you know, first of all, the speed is one thing that's in the back of your mind because you know he could drop a bunt. You know he could pull a bunt with you. We've seen him at times last year as the season went on, you know, hit a couple pretty good home runs. So he's got some pop. You know, he can drive the ball, but he just gets on base. He makes contact. He gets hits. He's the threat of stealing a base. All those little things put pressure on the defense, pressure on the pitcher. And I would love to see that guy on my team in that lineup every day.
And I was going to say, Gubb, it's tricky because you want to find a chance to get a middle-of-the-order left-hand bat in the lineup. That right now is David Peralta, and we want to see David play too. Everybody does. But this is part of what we talked about all through spring training. You say it's a nice problem to have, but you do have to sort of work it out somehow.
Yeah, you're going to find a rotation. Trumbo sat yesterday. Pollock's going to sit in the ball game as we record the podcast here in the opener of the series. You know, going back to the final game of that Dodgers series, ninth inning, Diamondbacks had staged to come back. They brought the score to within 7-4, had a runner on base. Ender's up there. I felt, I think you guys felt, he was going to get on base to get a chance to get Goldie up there. As it was a 10-pitch at bat before they finally got him
out. It was a tremendous at bat. Tremendous.
So, I mean, that's just what he does. He just, each and every at bat up there, he does not want to make an out.
He finds so many ways to impact the game. So Ender seems to be playing himself into the everyday lineup. As we're starting this series and this road trip here Monday in San Diego, you've got the lineup, right? Jake Lamb is in at third.
Yeah, you know, Lamb is in there. Aaron Hill's going to play second. Tuffy's going to bat eighth. The bottom of the order right now is the kicker for the Diamondbacks. If it's Tuffy, if it's Ahmed, if it's Owings or whatever, they're not getting a whole lot of production at the moment. Yeah. They're getting solid defense. I mean, Tuffy's calling a great game. Ahmed's playing some great shortstop. But they are going to need some offense coming off from at least two of the three at the bottom of the order. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I agree, and that's why I think you have to love the way Ahmed swung the bat that last game.
Two hits,
hard line drives. I mean, that's not hits. I mean, he squared those up pretty well.
Against a tough righty.
Yeah, belted them both right to dead center.
Yeah, so that was a really fun thing to see and a good thing to see. I saw Chris Owings get his first hit. You know, so I know that CO's going to hit. You know, Tuffy's going to, you know, he swings hard. He's going to run into a few, you know. But I think the big thing is, you know, just don't be outs down there. You know, just get on base enough, you know, so you can at least maybe have those innings where you can turn that lineup over.
And I think when Lamb is in there, and oftentimes he will hit six,
he's hitting six tonight.
That, you know, if you're talking six through nine, having Lamb in the lineup puts him in the six hole, so you get a little deeper in there with the middle of the order.
And then Hill's batting seventh.
Yeah,
tonight.
Then you got Aaron Hill. So clearly they're addressing the issue and they're trying to add some beef to that lower portion of the lineup. But here in San Diego now, we talked about how to find Enciarte at bats and get Peralta in there as well. Now we've got Lamb at third after he sat out against all those lefties for the Dodgers, and Chip Hale has said Jake is pretty much going to be in there most of the time, if not all the time, at third, and they'll try and find Aaron Hill some at bats, not at third base, but in the middle of the infield. And that, Gub, means that Chris Owings will have to play some shortstop, which Chip said he didn't want to have to do.
And which Chris Owings is doing in the first game against San Diego. Yeah. But, you know, Aaron Hill, who was supposedly relegated to the bench, he's probably has as many at-bats as anybody right now because he came out swinging the bat pretty well. Had that good, the two good exhibition games against the Cubs. So he got the start in the opener against Bumgarner. And, you know, he's still in there. So I think Chip's done a great job of getting everybody in and getting their at-bats and getting starts.
Everybody's played, and in doing that, he's done a great job of putting the Diamondbacks in position to win every game. Even a game that they're down 7-0 in the ninth against the Dodgers, they had the tying run on deck in the person of Goldie. I mean, Candy, he's really done a nice job of maneuvering things over the course of the ball game and managing the game.
And it's really not easy now that Laird's on the disabled list, and you know Pacheco really is your backup catcher there. So you know that kind of ties him up a little bit. That's why you see sometimes the pitcher will actually hit for himself, maybe, and that's happened a couple times. But I think you know when you look at the games that he's done, I mean he has managed them very solidly and done a great job with the bullpen. I thought he's put those guys in good situations to succeed. I like the, you know. The one guy that I always feel comfortable with is Ziegler coming on in between, like in innings.
Yeah,
and you know,
not
he's a
having
guy that,
his own inning.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not having to start the inning, but you know, he's one guy that you can bring in, and you know, you can count on him. Maybe getting that ground ball double play, or at least coming in throwing strikes. Some guys have a tough time, you know, coming in the middle of an inning, and so I think he recognizes that, and he's doing a good job with it.
The one thing we all talked about together was the way Chip managed that eighth inning in the first game of the season against San Francisco. They were down by a score of 5-1, and he used Jake Lamb off the bench as a pinch hitter. He came on for Owings, got the double, the three-run double to make it 5-4. Then he also used Cliff Pennington in that inning as a pinch hitter, David Peralta. But, you know, he tried to get the game even or get them the lead, and it was refreshing, I think, to see that, especially in the first game of the season. Use the bench, and if you have to use three or four guys off the bench to get a run, you do that. If you have to use three or four pitchers in an inning to get an out, you do that. You do whatever it takes to win a ball game.
I think it's really impressive that you played those six games right now, and the Diamondbacks have been in every single game.
Yeah, even when they were down 7-0 on Sunday.
Yep. Yeah, and they, you know, they made it a very close game and almost got Goldie up at the very end. So, I mean, that to me is very impressive.
You know, we talk about how this organization is evolving, and I asked Bob Brenly this on the TV side the other day, and I'll do it now as with you guys as we look back over the first week of the season. I want to quickly run through some names here. Chase Anderson, we know what he did last year. He had a pretty good effort in his first try this season. Archie Bradley was sensational on Saturday. We'll talk to Archie in just a moment here. Andrew Chafin has retired the last 16 batters he's faced as we record this on Monday. Ruby De La Rosa got the win in Game 2 over the Giants. I'm going down the list here. You've got
Jake Lamb.
Nick Ahmed, who's played shortstop almost every day. Jake Lamb, who had 7 RBIs, some big hits. David Peralta, who had the big 3-run homer.
AJ Pollock.
Ender Inciarte. I'm going to stop right there.
Youth is being served.
All the guys I just mentioned, okay, what do they all have in common? None of them were on the roster at this time last year. None of them, not one.
Yeah.
So this thing is really evolving here and getting better and growing. That wave of talent we've talked about, a lot of it is here now, and as we saw with Archie, there's more on the way. And you've got Shipley and Blair and some of the guys behind him. So it's amazing, guys, to look at how things have gone over the course of one calendar year in the players and the personnel we're talking about.
You know, teams really evolve into winning teams when they come together. And offensively, I really see this team kind of coming together like that. Now, the pitching staff has to. We talked to Stu about that and Tony La Russa, you know, before the season started. And they both had told me that, you know, they like who they have, but it's a matter of when they come together. And when they do, you know, they expect whenever that is that they're going to take off.
We've been around these guys, too, and I think they all like each other. I mean, you know, they hang. They played in the minor leagues, a lot of them together. And, you know, it seems to be a pretty good group. We're watching the relievers right down there now going through their routine prior to the first game of the Padres series. But, you know, it's kind of a fun group. There's not a lot of vocal leaders out there, but you've got Goldie as your, you know, leader on the field. His actions speak wonders. And Goldie will speak up. I think we got to get that across. Goldie will speak up when things need to be said.
It seems he's done, and we're only a week in, but it seems he's done a little more of that than he has in the past. And, you know, he and Aaron Hill are very close.
Mm-hmm.
Hilly really has become a veteran presence in there. Running, they established the kangaroo court again and fun things like that.
I like that.
But I see Goldie, and I see Aaron Hill, and I see Mark Trumbo, and I think there's, for me, in watching the way the other players react to those guys and the way they interact, those three guys, Candy, for me, seem to be the leaders in the clubhouse, quote unquote.
Well, let's go to Aaron Hill and let's look at his situation, and you can tell what kind of leader he is. Look at how he took that demotion, not, you know, going through spring training, really kind of being the second baseman at the very end, being told, well, look, we're going with these guys up the middle, and, you know, you're going to come off the bench. And look how he took it. Look how well he took that. He gets in there, you know, against that the series against the Cubs, you know, beforehand. He hits a couple balls hard. Next thing you know, he's there on opening day with Bumgarner on the mound for the Giants, contributes. And next thing you know, these young guys look at his attitude, and they look how he accepted that. You know, he didn't pout like a lot of veterans really would pout in that situation. He didn't. He took it, you know, he made a great situation out of something that he probably wasn't really pleased with.
He said it was his job to be professional and be available, and he has been certainly both of those things.
And does he still want to start? Sure. And could he still start? Sure. And he started a lot for the Diamondbacks. But, you know, I agree with Candy. You really got to tip your cap to the guy. Because he did not pout whatsoever, and things have gone, you know, very well. I think for the Diamondbacks to go 3-3 in that homestand against the defending world champs, and they've got some problems, but to win the 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers, I think was a step in the right direction for the Diamondbacks because they've had a lot of problems with the Dodgers. We know that over the last 3 years.
And I thought the walk-off win Friday on the Inciarte hit really built some nice momentum, Candy, going into the two-headed monster when you know you've got Kershaw and Greinke coming up Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, you looked forward into that series and you're going, you see those two guys and where they're lined up, you're going, man, this is going to be tough to win this series right now, you know, when you're matching up against two number one starters. But by winning that game, and then the way they took it to Kershaw, I mean, that was fun. I think the crowd enjoyed it. I think everybody, you know, enjoyed the telecast, the broadcast, everything about it, the fans that came to the game, you know, even the front office. I mean, that was fun.
Yeah, they were fired up.
One other thing we should mention about Archie and what he has meant, I think, to the Diamondbacks, look at the crowd that turned up for that ball game. You know, and to watch him pitch.
37,000 plus. They had more than 5,000 walk-up.
To watch him pitch. I mean, this kid has been heralded for a while. And, you know, Phoenix is a funny market. We've been here for a long time. Leo grew up here. I've been out here since 1979. If you win, you're going to draw, but you got to show me. But I think the Diamondbacks, with Archie, with what they brought in, making the ball club out of spring training, I think everybody was anxious and a little curious to see what this kid was about, and I don't think he disappointed.
It's funny. I go back, or you know, when I first started paying attention to baseball as a young, very young person, was mid-70s or so, and I go back to Mark Fidrich with the Tigers,
bird.
The bird, and on over the years, anytime any team gets a young, highly anticipated, highly publicized pitcher, and he comes up and does well, that, to me, generates almost more excitement than any other situation in any other sport. When you've got a really good young guy who's supposed to be great, and he comes up and he knows he's going to pitch every fifth day, it just builds. It's almost like a TV show like that you really watch, and all of a sudden everybody can't wait for the next episode. It just generates its own momentum.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it's more a young pitcher than a young position player.
Oh, much more so,
would you agree with that,
yeah.
Candy?
Well, the young pitcher is only probably going to start every fifth day, yeah. So people kind of get into that, and they don't have to go to the ballpark every day, and like if it's a regular position
right.
player. But, yeah, look, I'd pay money to bring my kid to go watch Paul Goldschmidt play also,
yeah.
You know, but he's that kind of player, you know, or some of the other even players around the league. But having a guy like Archie Bradley, already people are going, when's he going to pitch again?
That's
when's
it.
His next start?
You chart it. You go and look at the schedule, and you figure out, okay, I want to get ticket for, you know, Wednesday yep. when he's pitching here and here. We're going to get to Archie Bradley in 2 minutes, but I wanted to, before we do, get your take, Gub. It was, for me, my favorite night since I've been here. This is only my third year. You've been here since day one. Where did that night rank on your list? Because you've been here for all the big ones. Where is that perspective over the timeline since the Diamondbacks started?
Well, we were in this ballpark when Justin Upton broke in 2007 as a 19-year-old. And I think in his first at-bat, Candy, if memory serves me correct, he popped up to first base in foul territory. But he went on to help the Diamondbacks get to the postseason. That was a momentous occasion simply because this kid was the number one pick
right. number
in
one
the
overall,
draft
yeah.
in 05. So, you know, that was big. Randy Johnson's first outing as a Diamondback when he took the hill. You know, you can go on. Kurt Schilling. I tell the story, and I still laugh at this. When Schilling's first start, they made the trade. We were in St. Louis. This was in 2000, excuse me, when the trade was consummated by Joe Garagiola Jr. We pick up Schilling in the deal with the Phillies. He joins us in Florida at the old football stadium
yeah.
where we're playing the first ball game, and he comes out, wins his first game, but his first at bat, remember that old scoreboard they had out there in left field?
Mm-hmm.
He hit one off the scoreboard. He stands at second base with a double. He's got a big smile on his face. He's got a lead already. Takes his lead and gets picked off. But, you know, that was fun.
Well, that's familiar.
Same
doesn't?
Thing happened to Archie. Same thing happened to Archie.
Yeah. But, you know, that was a big moment. But this, you know, it's a homegrown talent, and I think that's really special and one you're always going to remember.
Well, let's get to it. Here is our first guest.
All right, friends, it is time.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome one of the magnificent figures?
He's so good.
My guest.
It's always a pleasure when our guest drops by.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
Well, we're joined in the cozy confines of the road radio booth here at the ballpark by Diamondback starter Archie Bradley, who electrified Chase Field over the weekend with his major league debut. And Arch, have you had time to absorb and have some perspective on Saturday night?
A little bit. It's all been a little crazy. You know, having all the family in and then going to dinner that night and then turn around and have a day game and then fly to San Diego. But the plane ride, even though it was short, was kind of my time to reflect and kind of, you know, take a moment and realize what actually happened Saturday night.
I don't think we've realized it, Cub. Has it set in with you? I mean, that was electric.
It was. I mean, you go up against a guy like Clayton Kershaw, arguably the best in the business, and he come out pitching better than he did. You get the win. But I want to go back to spring training, Archie. There was a time where Dave Stewart had come out and basically said he did not think you were ready yet to pitch in the major leagues. Did that push a button on you? I thought you were pretty good up until that time, but did that push you even further?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I already had enough motivation and a chip on my shoulder coming in just based off the performance I'd had last year in the minors. And same thing, I thought I'd thrown the ball pretty well coming into that day, and then that article came out, and I just happened to be starting against the Padres that day, and, you know, just had a little bit more fuel, a little bit more motivation. But like I said, the whole thing was, you know, kind of water under the bridge. Him and I both talked about it. You know, it wasn't really a big deal, but definitely, you know, when that came out, I was like, all right, let's you know, click it up a little bit higher and go to work.
What was that conversation like with Dave?
It was very simple. I mean, he called me in and was like, look, some things got taken out of context, you know, didn't really say it that way. He's like, I said some things along that line. He's like, but he said, you understand? He said, you know, we have to do a job, you have to do a job, and not everything I say is taken the right way or actually means what I'm saying. He said, we do things to protect our guys, and, you know, it just came out that way. And, you know, like, he was very upfront and honest with me, called me in, talked to me man to man, and like I said, it wasn't a big deal at all.
Hey, Archie, take us back to the day of your start, and some people don't realize the anxiety that you have for your first major league start. Not a lot of us have that. Can you kind of explain your day a little bit?
Well, any start day in general, and then especially my debut, the worst part is you get to the field later than you normally do, so you have all this free time, you know, during the day, and I'm still kind of in spring training mode where I was up at 7:30 in the morning, and I had all my family in town, my best friends from high school, numerous family members, and just, you know, I got up, ate breakfast with Jake Lamb, kind of like our daily routine we always do, and then went back to the house and was kind of sitting there. And to be honest, I never really got nervous. I was more anxious and just ready to get to the field, ready to get my warm-up started, because that's the worst part, is just the wait. And I just tried to, you know, treat it like a normal day, treat it like a normal start day, and like any other day I'm going to pitch. It just happened to be a first day in the big leagues.
We made the comment, their first five hitters, Rollins, Crawford, Gonzalez, Kendrick, and Ethier, all veteran guys, and they were probably going to make you work. And I think you had 3-ball, 2-strike counts on all of them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously go 3 full count to the first hitter of the game. I'm like, don't walk your first batter in the big leagues, please. I don't care if you give up a home run right here. Just don't walk them. And then same thing, you know, then I go full count the next guy, full count the next guy. I end up getting the strikeout and came in, and I was like, all right, I gotta throw more strikes or put them away earlier. I was like, I'm gonna run this pitch count up. But I think for any guy, especially making your debut, just to get through that first inning cleanly, not give up a base runner, more or less any hits or anything, was big for me motivation wise and transitioning into the rest of the game.
Did that help you get your feet under you, getting through that first? You get the strike out of Gonzalez to end it, and you're back in the dugout. Okay, that's one in the books. 1-2-3. How did that change the rest of the game for you?
Well, it was. You know, I got to come in and I took a deep breath. I was like, all right, there's your first inning. You're a big leaguer now. Now let's go pitch. Let's treat this like any other game. You know, let's stick to the game plan. Who's coming up next? How are we going to attack them? And then the rest was just, you know, how am I going to get these guys out?
There was a point, I want to say second, maybe third inning, where all of a sudden you're working very quickly. Nomar Garcia-Parra told me that in the Dodger TV booth. He said, I really like the way Archie just attacked, got the ball, was ready to go. But there was that point, second, third inning sometime, where you were just firing in fastball after fastball after fastball, and then you got the side that one time. It really did seem like you found a rhythm there at one point.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I guess the only time I really got nervous or kind of was conscious, I guess, if you want to put it that way, was when I gave the double to Kendrick. And had, you know, Kendrick on second, Gonzalez on third. Was like, all right, if I give up a hit here, you know, I'm going to give up 2 runs. And I think we were only winning 1 or 2-0 at the time. And that's when I was like, all right, you know, now let's get down to business. Let's get a little more serious. Let's get these guys out and get into the dugout. But I think once I got out of that inning, I think that was in the fourth, I believe. Maybe fourth or third, I'm not for sure. But once I got out of that, I kind of, you know, found a rhythm, obviously went out in the fifth, struck out the side. I knew I didn't have a lot of pitches to work with, so I wanted to be very efficient and try to get some quick outs.
Okay, pitching was awesome, but like all pitchers, you got to worry about your hitting, right? You step up to the plate, you're facing the MVP, Cy Young Award winner, Clayton Kershaw, and you hammer one to left field.
First pitch you saw in the big leagues.
Tell me about that.
Well, I try to take my bats very seriously. I mean, you see guys like Bumgarner, Kershaw, Greinke, just to name a few, who, you know, you have to treat them like normal hitters because of the way they handle the bat, and I want to do the same. I mean, especially in the National League, if you can hit, get your bunts down, you can maybe give yourself an extra inning or two where they won't have to pinch hit for you. But, you know, I just knew we had 2 outs. I thought I might see a fastball first pitch, and I was like, I'm going to make sure I'm ready for it.
I've got to ask you, we're all our own worst critic. Your stuff the other night, and you get a mulligan because it was your first major league start and everything else, but how did you think your stuff was against the Dodgers?
I mean, like, it's tough to argue with the results, but I know for me, I mean, the pitch count was an issue. I did have 4 walks. I don't feel like any of them were necessarily bad walks. I mean, a couple of them were full count walks.
Right, 2 to Gonzalez.
Yeah, which I'm not, you know, not too upset about. I'm not going to let that guy beat
exactly.
me. But, you know, I had I'd say average command of my fastball compared to where it was in spring. And a lot of it was, you know, the nerves and stuff. But obviously I'd like to go into the fourth or fifth inning around 50, 60 pitches where you normally should be. You know, not leaving the sixth with 112, that's pretty high. But, you know, that's you know, that one's over with. And that's, you know, some of the things I'm going to work on going into this next one against San Francisco is just trying to make better quality pitches and get some quicker outs.
Yeah, what about mixing in? I mean, the curveball at times seemed to be very effective, and Tuffy was tremendous back there, keeping that ball in front of him. What about the off-speed stuff, the breaking stuff, as we move forward here?
I mean, yeah, I think I threw maybe two or three changeups in the game, and mostly just fastball, curveball. But I think you're just going to keep seeing, you know, a better mix. I kind of told Tuffy before the game, you know, hey, I'm going to follow your lead. Kind of just guide me through this. So whatever you put down, I'm going to try to execute the pitch the best we can. And, you know, I feel like he never put me in a bad spot. Every pitch I agreed with, I think there's one time I shook him off, and it's I wanted to throw a fastball. I was really feeling my fastball that inning. But, you know, a lot of it's just the game plan we come up with, what guys hit, what guys like to see, and things like that, and just really rely on him and Hark on what we want to do.
It seemed very early in the first and second inning, it was almost all fastballs. Do you think that was part of the design just to get you comfortable out there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, very beginning of spring, Harky and I had a conversation. You know, he's like, I want to get you to the point to where you can navigate your way through a lineup throwing only your fastball. I mean, that's what, you know, a lot of the greats do. They can rely solely on their fastball to get themselves out of jams, to beat guys, things like that. And he's like, you have one of those fastballs, and I want to see you get back to that point. But I definitely think, you know, establishing first off the strike zone, and then, yeah, I mean, just trying to get ground balls, keep the ball down, and use the fastball to get out some situations.
When you before the game, when you sit down there, and whether you talk to Hark or whether you talk to Tuffy, you sit down and kind of go over the lineup a little bit. You know, was that one of the big themes? Was just getting through the first time through the order with the fastball, or was there something about, all right, well, we know that Agon's pretty hot right now. You know, we're not going to let this guy beat us. We'll walk him. We know where he's at. Or, you know, the first five hitters we talked about all being, you know, pretty disciplined hitters and stuff. I mean, what was the kind of the game plan that you guys all sat down, or did you all three sit down together and talk?
I mean, we sit down before every start and go through their lineup, you know, who's hot, who's not, first pitch swingers, you know, things like that. And then I think, like I said, the biggest thing for me was establishing the strike zone, you know, calming down my nerves and making sure I'm throwing quality pitches, because not just strikes, because you can fill it up, but if you're leaving the ball up, obviously, you know, you aren't going to have a lot of success. But it was more of Hark and Tuffy, you know, talking to me and explaining kind of, you know, how these things work, how these hitters react, especially their first time seeing me, you know, kind of the swings and approaches they're going to take. And then, you know, the biggest thing for me is processing all that and trying to remember it. You know, it's easy to talk about it, but, you know, after every inning I'd come in and be like, all right, you know, Gonzalez is leading off, then we got, you know, Kendrick up next or whoever was up next, and just trying to remember what we talked about and how to get him out.
Final one for me, Archie. Howie Kendrick fouls out to Mark Trumbo to end the sixth inning. You knew what your pitch count was. You knew you were coming out of the ball game. Relief as you walked off the field with a big ovation?
Oh, yeah. Hart came out right before. He's like, hey, this is probably going to be your last guy, so whatever you got left, throw it at him.
I wondered if he was saying that when he went out for that mound visit, because it was Kendrick up there with two outs in the sixth. You would walk Gonzalez, and it seemed like that was the discussion.
Yeah, he just came out and said, hey, you're doing a hell of a job. He's like, you know, I'm gonna be honest, you got one guy left, so whatever you got left in it, throw it at this guy, try to get him out. So fortunately got him to pop up, and yeah, walking off, you know, I started to see people stand up, and I tried to just keep my head down because I didn't want to smile or anything. I just wanted to get in the dugout. And then right before I got in, I looked up and saw everyone stand, and then, you know, the whole team was right there in front of me, and I kind of smiled a little bit and was like, all right, this is pretty awesome.
It was an awesome night. I mean, it was, Candy, it was fun just to do the game on the TV side, I'm sure for you as well, on radio. It was one of those nights you remember.
I love watching it, and I loved watching you pitch. I saw you throw last year in spring training, and I thought, I said, man, this guy, to me, in my era, you look just like Roger Clemens to me. I mean, you were just throwing downhill. You had an electric fastball, and you know good things were going to happen right there. So I'm, you know, so happy that, you know, you finally got your chance and went after him. Took the bull by the horns and went after him. That was awesome. Continued success.
And now you get, it looks like Bumgarner, right, in the Giants?
Yeah, I mean, why not? You know, Kershaw and Dodgers and Bumgarner and the Giants. But, I mean, that's the thing. I think you're going to see that, obviously, with how stacked this division is this year. I mean, I think it's always been competitive. But you look at what the Padres have done, who the Rockies are. I mean, this is a very, very competitive division. So, you know, for me, it's now transitioning to the point where, hey, this is going to be an everyday thing. You know, it's debut's over. Now it's trying to win games and win series.
Get into the routine. And we all appreciate that. And we appreciate you coming up here and joining us on D-backs podcast. Archie Bradley. Archie, thanks so much.
Yeah, enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
Governor.
Now, the man who's seen it all.
Now we got the ball, and this is a bat.
The D-backs play-by-play voice since our very first game, and then some.
Now look at, I say look at here.
It's this week's edition of Hey, Governor.
Thought we would talk about the Diamondbacks' first ever road trip in their inaugural baseball season, 1998. They started at home to the Diamondbacks, lost their first game to the Rockies, ended up losing that three-game series, and then lost the first two games to San Francisco. So out on the road they went with a 1-5 record. Their first stop was Los Angeles, where they lost 2 out of 3. Then they came to San Diego to play the Padres at Qualcomm Stadium. And the matchup that night, it was Andy Benes against Kevin Brown. The Padres came in at 7-2, while the Diamondbacks were 2-7. Actually, Benes outdueled Brown through 8 innings of that ball game. The Diamondbacks took a 4-2 lead into the bottom of the 9th inning. On came Felix Rodriguez to try and close things out. Greg Vaughn started with a base hit to center field. He then took second base on a ground out by catcher Carlos Hernandez. Chris Gomez took a strike three, and Rodriguez and the Diamondbacks were 1 out away from a victory. But Mark Sweeney pinch hit for Dan Mussele, the pitcher, and Sweeney with a wild pitch sending the runner to third base, drew a walk. So it was runners at first and third. Kelvin Alvarez was then coming to the plate. James Mouton went in to run for Sweeney, and he swiped second base. So the Padres had runners at second and third with 2 out, and the Diamondbacks still leading by a score of 4-2. Kelvin Alvarez ended up walking. That loaded the bases. And on came Steve Finley against Felix Rodriguez. And Finley, on the second pitch of the at-bat, hit a grand slam into right field. And the Padres ended up beating the Diamondbacks by a score of 6-4. A devastating loss. And the thing I remember most about that grand slam before a crowd of about 29,000 at Qualcomm Stadium, the Padres continued to play it on the replay board over and over and over again. Not only that night, but the next day. So the Diamondbacks still had to watch it. Padres went on to sweep that four-game series. And they went on to finish that year 98-64. They won the National League West. They went on to win the National League Divisional Series 3-1 over Houston. They won the National League Championship Series 4-2 over Atlanta before being swept in the World Series by the New York Yankees. Of course, the Diamondbacks went on to finish that inaugural season 65-97 under Buck Showalter. But the Diamondbacks have gotten a little revenge all time. They lead the season series with San Diego 158-140. So it didn't start well against the Padres in that loss, the Finley Grand Slam, first ever game between the two at Qualcomm Stadium. But over the years, the Diamondbacks have gotten their revenge for that first ever meeting between these two divisional rivals.
Take me out to the ball game.
Let's see what else is happening in the majors these days.
I don't believe what I just saw.
Time to go around the league.
Around the league, guys, we are a week into the 2015 season. Nothing jumps out at me, Gub, in terms of surprise. I look at the AL Central a little bit. The Royals started 6-0.
I got a couple.
The Tigers started 6-1. And the White Sox, I mean, it looked like for a while they might not win a game. What else have you seen that's caught your attention?
I did not think Milwaukee and Miami would be 1-5, and I did not think Atlanta would be 5-1 through six games. Now, it's only six games. But, you know, Atlanta, they tore their ball club apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, they won 5 of their first 6. Miami, I think they expected to get off to a pretty quick start. And 1-5 is not what they wanted. Milwaukee, now they've got some pitching problems.
Big time.
Yeah. So maybe that's showing rearing its ugly head here early on.
How about the Nationals, 2-5?
Yeah, they've struggled a bit. You know, Max Scherzer, they're injured, but Candy said their pitchers are all there, so they can still pitch. They just they're having some problems right now too.
For me, the Nationals will not win the World Series because Candy. This has nothing to do with Matt Williams, who we know is a terrific manager. But it just seems like the more money they throw at that thing, and the more guys and pieces they acquire, the worse the fit is. And it just doesn't seem like those pieces, for me, from a distance, go together well.
See, we just had this conversation yesterday. I said I don't like the teams. They're going to go out and spend a lot of money for that one free agent. You know, I don't have a problem them paying money like a guy like Jeter, a guy that's homegrown. You got to pay him to keep him. I love that part of it. But when a team goes out and spends that much money on a guy and brings him over there, you know, I just immediately root against that team.
And one more thing about Washington. They signed Ryan Zimmerman to a long contract. Now, he got hurt, in fairness to them. I mean, you know, it's a long deal, but they had to find a position for him to play. They right. made room by not bringing back Adam LaRoche,
right.
who is a great clubhouse guy. Candy, we had him for a year. Terrific person to have. He was great in Washington, great for that team. And I really think they miss his presence on that ball club.
You know, it's hard to tell because I'm kind of not right in there with it, but yeah. we know what kind of guy he was and the effect that he had even in the clubhouse that the Diamondbacks had when he was here. He's a great guy. And
he swings a pretty good bat.
Yeah, he's very productive bat. Yeah. I mean, he gives you a good at bat, and he's a no-nonsense guy. Great defender. I mean, he works hard out there. No doubt about it, but, you know, Zimmerman's a pretty good player.
He is.
And if everything would have worked out for the Nationals, and he would have been their third baseman for years because he was an excellent defender yeah. over there.
He's had a very good first week defensively at first base. He's looked very good.
Well, wait.
NL West, the Rockies opened up by beating up on the Brewers. And it shows, again, when that lineup and that group is together and healthy, they can do a lot of damage, and they certainly did at Miller Park to open up the season.
And before they played the Giants in the series, they had played all six games in the Central, whereas all the other teams in the National League West had played against one another.
Good point.
So they opened up against a different division.
Padres won three in a row to close out that series against the Giants, and we're here to start a three-game series with San Diego. As we start this series, obviously we don't know what's going to happen here. We're recording this before Game 1. But it looks like this group that they put together here, Candy, is going to work out pretty well and definitely be a team to contend with.
Yeah, I think everyone was waiting to see what was going to happen out there. You know, you heard a lot of the negatives about it, you know, after they were all assembled, about all the strikeouts maybe that, you know, this team's going to have. Can Will Myers, can he play center field? Can, you know, there's a lot of stuff like that. But, you know, watching the opening day crowd that the Padres had, I thought it was awesome for the city.
It was big.
It was big time.
This place, yeah.
You know, too bad they lost the game. But, I mean, it was, you know, they're bringing the crowds in. People are talking about it all over town here, and I think that's great for the city.
And they've been kind of like that. They're a little bit like Phoenix, too. You show me what you got. But right now they're showing them and the fans are enjoying it.
Well, we'll find out what happens here on this three-game series against the Padres and then four against the Giants, and that, guys, closes our first D-backs podcast from the road, and we hope we'll be the first of many more here over the course of the season. That's episode 17. Our special thanks to Tom Candiotti. Candy, it's always great to have you on the pod.
I just keep waiting. You know, you keep buying me dinners. I keep showing up here.
The Gub and I actually did buy dinner last night.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know.
Gub and I were the first one to get our wallets out. And we each threw some of that
T-Rex
meal money
last
down.
Night.
Yeah. You were those short arms. So thank you to Tom Candiotti. Also, as always, thank you to the man who has been here since day one, the watcher on the wall, the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the Earl of Grantham, the Governor Greg Schulte. That's you.
It was fun. It was a good show. You know what? We were a little concerned that this show wasn't going to piece together like it did, but Archie's arrival up here in the press box made it all well worthwhile.
And thanks to Casey Wilcox for making that happen here at the ballpark. Yeah, you never know. It's a road show, and you know what time are we getting there? Where are we going to set up, and do we have enough plugs and all that stuff? And I want to commend the Kingslayer, who did a fantastic job. And at one point when Archie was here, it was a four-man booth. And Leo, I thought you really...
Five-count Leo.
Yeah, five-count Leo. Well, four and a half. And I thought it was really some of your best work.
Well, I'm just glad it all worked, and I'm just proud to be a part of it.
What's that say? I'm just glad it all worked.
I'm as surprised as anyone.
Thank you.
I guess is the best way of putting it.
Thank you, Littlefinger. Yeah, nice work, the mother of dragons. So hopefully by the time we get back, I'll be able to watch Game of Thrones, because we're coming back Sunday, and that's when they run episode 2 of the new season. I know you guys will all not be watching.
That's another Game of Thrones theme show. Hopefully that's the end of that for the year, if you're not a fan. Thanks for hanging in with us throughout the Seven Kingdoms as we start our tour through the National League West. Don't forget, you can follow the Arizona Diamondbacks on all kinds of social media, on Instagram, on the Twitter, on Facebook. You can follow this podcast at D-backs Podcast, where we tweet out all the links to the shows, all news about who's coming up and when. And, of course, you can listen at dbacks.com. You can also listen on iTunes. So thanks again for listening and downloading. D-backs Podcast is brought to you by, as always, Beverages by Hoffman, by Martin Paints, Martin Paints at Angel's Paints, and Matzah's by Streit's. For Tom Candiotti, the Governor, Greg Schulte, and the Kingslayer, Leo Gilmartin, I'm Steve Berthune. Thanks for listening to Episode 17, and we'll see you next time. So long, everybody.
This has been another edition of D-backs Podcast.
The game is over, and the Diamondbacks have got to win here.
Thanks for listening.
It's over. Go home.
We'll see you soon at Chase Field for more D-backs Baseball.